So according to the NA rules, when the chairperson is not available to start a meeting, the committee can elect one of its members to act as a chairperson. So now I am going to request members to nominate an acting chairperson. I see that Mr. Zeki, your hand is up. Are you ready to nominate?
Thank you. Thank you, Kolisa. Yes, indeed. I'm nominating Ntate Colin Malatsi to chair.
Thank you, Mr. Zeki. Can I have a seconder, please?
I second the proposal from Honorable Zeki. Thank you, Chair of the session.
Thank you, Ms. Shwayi. Honorable Malachi, are you able to take the position to be an acting chairperson? An apology for me that I am going to hand over to Hanim, who is going to be the secretary of the day, but I will be assisting her. But she is going to be the one who is going to be in the meeting as a committee secretary, but I will assist her. Thank you very much, Acting Chair.
Thank you very much, Kolisa. Thank you very much to members for joining the meeting on time. I'll request the secretary to flag the agenda. Okay, thank you. Thank you. I think you're all welcome to this committee meeting. I hope that we'll have fruitful discussion to enrich the documents and making sure that we play our role that we've been appointed for of playing oversight. All of you have got agenda with you, which is opening and welcoming, observation of moment of silence, and meditation and prayer, election of acting chair, apologies, and other items that are on the agenda. And I believe that on your side, you all have the agenda. The meeting is officially opened by myself, Acting Chair Khulukhelo Khwen Malachi. I'll request that we observe a moment of silence and meditation or prayer before we start the meeting, which is item number 2. Thank you. We have already done item number 3, which is the election of the acting chair. We will now move to item number 4, which is apologies.
Chairperson, have we adopted the agenda? It's Honorable Powell. I'd like to make a recommendation.
Oh, my apologies, Honorable Powell. We made a mistake on the agenda. We're not adding an item for adoption of the agenda. It's fine. Yeah.
I think
you'll be the first one to, you are noted, you'll be the first one to speak on the agenda, Honorable Powell. Yes, you can come in, Honorable Powell, on the adoption of the agenda.
I just wanted to ask, Chair, that generally in this committee, we take the presentations and then we do deliberations. We generally don't do presentation, deliberation. I'm open to either, but I would like to potentially make a suggestion, because the two presentations are interlinked, that item 6 be subjoined with item 8, so that we take both presentations and then move to deliberations. That's just a recommendation, but I'm happy as well for it to remain as is. I just think it will be a smarter way of doing business.
Okay, with that amendment, which I think I agree with, is the second of the agenda, with the amendment of item number 6.
Chair, I second the agenda with that amendment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. And just to emphasize, honorables, that we need to work on time. I've seen in the past where one person speaks for more than 2 hours, and that doesn't assist us to be proactive or give other honorable members an opportunity to speak, because in post the committee meeting, we still have other parliamentary responsibilities to attend to. Now, the agenda is very clear that it's from 9 to 1 p.m. Now, I'm going to be very strict on time on how we engage, and we'll request members not to repeat themselves, but also to summarize and keep their points very short, so that we stick to the time that we've agreed on from 9 to 1 p.m. But with the adoption of the agenda, I'll immediately move to the apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson. It's Haneem. There are no apologies except that Ms. Semenya will join the meeting later.
Okay. There are no apologies apart from the late attendance of Ms. Semenya. It means that if we're happy with that, we'll move to item number 5, which is a briefing by the Special Investigation Unit on the finding of Telanani temporary relocation units in Limpopo and Dengen Village, Eastern Cape Province, and other matters relating to human settlement. Minister?
No, it's the head of the SIU, Chair.
Oh, head of the SIU, my apologies.
Yes. No, thanks. Are we allowed to now take to the floor?
Please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. We appreciate the opportunity to brief the committee. Perhaps just in the interest of what the Chair was saying of time, we did not have an indication of how many minutes we have to present, just so that we stay within time. We've got quite a lengthy presentation, but we could present it within the time that would be allocated, because we've included all our investigations that are in the provincial and national departments of human settlement. So, Chair, with that in mind, perhaps we could just be given an indication of how long we have. But before then, maybe I can just introduce quickly my colleagues that are with me today. Dr. Wells is the Chief Legal Counsel, who will cover areas where there's civil litigation. Mr. Leonard Lekgetho, who will be driving the presentation, is the Chief National Investigating Officer. And then we've got Mr. Khanyaho, who's the spokesperson of SIU. Then we've got members from the provinces, the heads of the provinces where these matters are investigated. I've got Ms. Chabalala, who's the head of the provincial head in Free State. She's joined by the head of the investigation there, Mr. Brink. And then I've got Mr. Hasaho. He's the head of the provincial office in Mpumalanga, where some of the matters are investigated. He's joined by Ms. Hart Jechen, who's the head of the investigations there. And then the head of the investigations in the Eastern Cape, Mr. Koya, the provincial head from Eastern Cape has got a commitment that we've allowed her to go and attend to, and Mr. Koya will do the questions that come from there. So, Chair, if we are allowed, then we'll go swiftly into the presentation. Is there any indication of time?
Please try to be fast.
Oh, okay. Thank you. We'll do so, Chair. Mr. Lekgetho, if you can just please go to the next slide, please. The presentation outline, Honorable Chair, and the first few slides, really, we've presented before before this committee. We'll not go into details on the slides one or covering item one up to four. And we will really focus on items five up to 10, which are really the investigations that the committee would like to be appraised on. The next slide, Mr. Lakhato, please. These are the legislative mandate within which we do our work. The committee is quite familiar with that. We've presented before. Next slide. The vision and mission of SIU, we always cover it, including the values. The committee would probably have seen that. Next slide. But just a few minutes on these outcomes, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, you will see that it's going to be a common thread as we present. We'll present the investigation and indicate what the outcomes were. And the outcomes are mainly where we find irregularities that we would then institute based on the evidence that we have gathered, institute civil litigation to cancel the contracts that would have been irregularly awarded and recover the monies that the state would have lost. The disciplinary outcomes would be where officials would have been involved in the process. Similarly, where there's evidence pointing to criminal action, we will point out in each and every presentation how many matters have been referred to NPA for prosecution or for consideration for prosecution. And the other block on the right-hand side is that we do refer to various other regulatory authorities so that they can take appropriate action where necessary. Then the systemic recommendations is where we engage with the accounting officers to improve from the weaknesses that we have identified during the investigations. Next slide, please. The strategic focus areas really therefore for information of the committee, if you can roll down to the next slide. We have taken all of these focus areas into account as we started really improving on the quality of our investigations, the turnaround times, monitoring the referrals that we make for implementation, acceleration of civil litigation through the special tribunal, which has really proved to be so valuable. So really the rest is for the information of the Honorable Committee that would be informed on what our strategic focus areas are, and they continue to be because we're still really perfecting some of the areas. Next slide, Mr. Lakhato. Yes, this is a continuation of the strategic focus areas. All of this continue to inform on how we execute on our mandate. We take all of this into account, key stakeholders. We want to continue to also now run data analytics on number I there, number J. We are committed on clean governance to ensure that internally, as we investigate some of this irregularities, we have to make sure that our house is in order. And then, of course, the K and L there focuses internally on the enablement functions, which are the support functions. And we would like to continue to be a high-performing organization. And we have put all those measures in place. Thank you, Mr. Lakhato. You can go to the next slide. We will now focus on the investigations that the Honorable Committee would like to be appraised on. And at this stage, I'll hand over to my colleague, the Chief Investigating Officer of SIU, Mr. Lakhato, to take the committee through that. Mr. Lakhato, please take note of what the Honorable Chair said, that we do speedily. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you, Advocate, and thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members and colleagues and everybody in the platform. I will present on the investigation. I will be quick. In terms of the press proclamation that we'll be talking about, it's investigation which were conducted in terms of proclamation R23 of 2020, whereby we will look firstly on the procurement of process for temporary residence area by Limpopo Housing Development Agency. In terms of this process, Chair, the proclamation was issued in order to investigate the procurement of or contracting for goods, work, and services, including the construction, refurbishment, leasing, occupation, and use of immovable properties during or in respect of national state of disaster. And we are looking at the process, which was not fair, competitive, transparent, equitable, and cost-effective. And also the process which were contrary to legislation or manual guidelines, practice notes, circular, process which are not followed. Chair, that's the whole mandate of the investigation. Then it also continued that we are also looking at the conduct by officials and also fraudulent or any related unauthorized or irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure or any improper or unlawful conduct by official employee of the state. Then when we go to the real matter, Chairperson, regarding the temporary residence area procured by Limpopo, on 15 March 2020, the government enacted in terms of Section 21 of the Disaster Management Act, Act 57 of 2002, and declared COVID a national state of disaster. And on 23 March 2020, the president locked the country to flatten the curve of COVID-19 pandemic in accordance with the World Health Organization guidelines to manage the pandemic. Countries were encouraged to practice and promote social distancing to reduce community transmission. The Limpopo Provincial Department of Cooperative Governance, Human Settlement and Traditional Affairs identified a number of densely populated informal settlements in Limpopo province, which made it difficult to practice social distancing. COGSTAR prioritized two informal settlements, which is Talana Hostels and Beggarsford Extension 10, which required urgent attention in the form of a partial relocation. And on 8 May 2020, COGSTAR appointed HDA as an implementing agent to procure and appoint a service provider to construct temporary residence area. HDA advertised a tender to construct 30 square meter temporary residence in Greater Tzaneen, which is at Talane Hostels, and the one at Fetakomo Tubatsi Municipality, which is at Beggarsford in Limpopo province, and the contract amount was 12.3 million. HDA deviated from the normal procurement process of advertising the bid for 21-day period. The deviation was done in terms of Section 8.1 of the National Treasury SCM Instruction Note 3 of 2016/2017. An emergency procurement may occur when there is a serious and unexpected situation that poses an immediate risk to health, life, property, or environment, which calls on an agency to action, and there is insufficient time to invite for competitive bids. 13 service providers submitted their bids, and all the 13 bids went through BEC and BAC process, and Aventino was awarded the contract. And on 22 July 2020, the CEO approved a request for the extension of scope of work. The following additional work was specified: construction of 152 pit litanies at Fetakomo Tubatsi, that is Beggarsford Extension 10, supply and installation of 10,000 liter of water tanks with 4 taps. The value of the extension to the contract was $3 million, and the total value of the contract went up to $15.3 million. The review of Aventino bids documents, the SIU reviewed the documents that were submitted by Aventino to support their proposal, and we identify members of professional teams that were proposed by Aventino. The team members were as follows. They indicated that they've got the professionals in terms of architects, engineer, construction health and safety agent, and project managers, and construction health and safety project safety manager and directors. Then the team traced and interviewed these professional teams. They all denied working for a company called Aventino. They also stated that they did not give Aventino permission to use their names when bidding for any work. They further indicated that their CVs, work histories, and qualification was falsified. When we come to the BEC and BAC process, which were followed in order to appoint Aventino, BEC and BAC members were interviewed regarding their roles during the evaluation and adjudication of the bids, especially Aventino bids documents. They provided the following responses. They stated that they were not aware of the misrepresentation, that they assumed that the contractors had engaged with these professionals, which were indicated in the CVs of the Aventino. BEC and BAC do not conduct any form of due diligence on the CVs, qualification, or credential of the team members. They accept the information on face value. However, they are of the view that had the misrepresentation been identified during the sittings of the committees, Aventino would have been disqualified. Then when looking at project execution, SIU conducted site inspection on the 10th of September 2020 and found at Talana Hostel that all 40 structures were built. And at Beggarsford Extension 10, no structures were complete. There was only half-built structures. By the end of October 2020, Aventino had already submitted two invoices to HDA. The first one was for an amount of 1.4 million, and the second one was for an amount of 1 million. The first invoice was paid on 1st April 2020, and the second one was paid on 15 October 2020, and total payments that has been made thus far was 2.5 million. And on the outcome of the investigation, starting with civil litigation, counsel has been appointed and had an application lodged at the special tribunal. And the purpose is to set aside the contract between Aventino Group CC and HDA to the value of 15 million, as the contract was based on misrepresentation and it was not supposed to have been awarded to the service provider. Based on the misrepresentation and fraud, the SIU is to recover 2.5 million that is already been paid to Aventino, and the SIU issued a review application and the matter is opposed. The parties have scheduled a case management meeting which will take place today, that is 25 May 2022. Still on the investigation outcomes, in terms of disciplinary referrals, we have referrals for disciplinary action were made against all members of BEC and BAC for their failure to conduct due diligence in performance of their duties during the sittings of the two committees, and they consist of three BEC members and three BAC members. And outcomes in terms of NPA referrals, evidence pointing to the commission of fraud has been referred to the National Prosecuting Authority against Aventino Group and its sole director. And on 17 December 2020, the DPCI stroke the Hawks arrested the owner of Aventino on a charge of fraud. A case reference is Polokwane case 384/12/2020. The matter is set down for trial on 24 June 2022 at Polokwane High Court. And in terms of still outcomes, administrative action, evidence was referred to HTA to place Aventino Group CC and its director on a database of restricted supplier so that they are prohibited from getting contracts from the state. A referral has been made to NHDRC for them to take an administrative action against Aventino Group CC for their unethical behavior or conduct. SIU issued a letter to HTA recommending to the HTA to make not to make any further payments to Aventino Group. The SIU made this recommendation immediately after the first site inspection when it became apparent that the structure that were built by Aventino Group CC were not safe and posed a public health and safety hazard to inhabitants. Therefore, 12.8 million has been withheld by HTA pending the litigation. Then the next matter relates to Eastern Cape Department of Human Settlement. Background of the matter is that on the 11th September 2020, the SIU received allegation and request for investigation of the procurement of temporary housing structure in response to COVID-19 pandemic by Eastern Cape Department of Human Settlement to the tune of 300 million. According to the allegation, these temporary structures were procured through deviation and without following competitive bidding process. The allegation further highlights the fact that this deviation worth 214 million were shared amongst four companies. It is further alleged that these four companies each got identical contracts to supply and erect 450 temporary units for the same contract value of 31.4 million each. In terms of the finding of the investigation, the SIU confirmed that the appointment of the four service provider as alleged by the whistleblower and further confirmed that the procurement process that led to the appointment of the four service providers was undertaken initially for something else. Soon after the emergency of COVID-19, the department deviated from a normal process and appointed the four service provider for the densification of informal settlement. The deviation approved on 25 March 2020 was meant to be an emergency procurement relying on relaxed procurement process during the COVID-19. Like I indicated that initially the department appointed four service providers for another week. Then when COVID came, they used the same service provider which was appointed for something else so that they can use them for this work that we are investigating. The service providers were appointed to construct 1,800 temporary units for a period of 6 months. The contracts of the four service providers were extended for 5 months from October 2020 to 31 March 2021. The same project was then deviated from the de-densification project to build structure on emergency basis. Most of the temporary shelters that were built should have been done from the disaster management budget or any other available budget to assist the affected families. At the stage of the completion of the SIU investigation, which is 31 March 2021, the service provider only built 346 units out of the 1,800 units, and that the SIU concluded that the procurement was not an emergency. Whilst the construction of the temporary units for the destitute family is justified on humanitarian ground, the usage of the COVID budget was not justified. The deviation was only meant for the de-densification of crowded informal settlement. In terms of the outcome of the investigation pertaining to several referrals, SIU is busy with the preparation of the matter for civil litigation for the cancellation of the contract, and we have brief counsel who will consult with witnesses and finalize the review application by 30 June 2022. The next matter relates to Housing Development Agency Eastern Cape, and on this one, on the 5th of May 2021, the SIU received allegation via whistleblower requesting the SIU to conduct an investigation into the contracts awarded to HTA during the pandemic, awarded by HTA during the pandemic. The allegation relates to the HTA temporary residential unit de-densification program, and in specific to the contract awarded to one company in respect of the construction of the TRUs at Duncan Village, which is at East London. This investigation is being investigated under Proclamation R23 of 2020 and is estimated to be completed by 31 May 2022. Investigation findings, although the contract was for the urgent construction of 1,174 units to address the de-densification during the pandemic, a year later and less than 486 units were constructed at a cost of 75 million. That is approximately 64,000 per unit. 3 months later, the contract was extended to include construction of services at the cost of additional 86 million. The SIU found that the above mentioned extension was irregular. Connected to the extension of the initial contract, HTA appointed one consulting engineer to oversee the construction at further cost of 26 million. In terms of the investigation outcome civil referral, the SIU Civil Litigation Unit Case Assessment Unit is considering the matter and will advise on the merit and quantum on the 7th of June. Potential recovery on this matter is equals to 112 million. And in terms of NPA in disciplinary referral, investigation is complete. Referrals are under internal review and the review will be completed by the end of May 2022. The next matter still in Eastern Cape relates to Buffalo City Metro Municipality. And in terms of this one, on the 12th of November 2021, a whistleblower reported allegation of maladministration, fraud and corruption that took place at the Buffalo City Metropolitan Municipality during period of 20 May to June 2020. They alleged that the official of the municipality are colluding with service provider who submitted bids or quotation for three tenders advertised during May 2020 under the National State of Disaster. The following three tenders were advertised by BCMM on 8 May 2020, that is COVID-19-2020 tender one, which was the appointment of service provider to supply, deliver, train incumbents in and install 100, that is 300 meter square mobile prefabricated structure with light steel. So these three tenders are categorized as COVID-19-2021 and COVID-19-2022 and COVID-19-2023. They were all the same, which is appointment of service provider to supply and deliver, train incumbents and install, that is the 300 meter square mobile prefabricated structure. The investigation is being investigated under procurement R23 of 2020 and is estimated to be finalized by the 31st of May 2022. Investigation finding thus far is that during the financial year of 2019/2020, consequence of the outbreak of COVID-19 pandemic, the head of the Department of Housing motivated on 6 April 2020 for the procurement of 335 temporary housing structures to be treated as an emergency. 340 million additional funding was set aside by National Department of Human Settlement for this program on 27 March 2020. The authority to procure the 335 temporary housing structures to support COVID-19 intervention was granted by the city manager on the 5th of May 2020. The SIU has found that the procurement process followed was irregular. And still under investigation finding, three service providers were appointed by BCMM to execute the work and were allocated different number of units to build, and the service provider being COVID-19-2021 was for construction of 100 structure value at 6.3 million. Then COVID-19-2020 tender number two was for the construction of 115 structure, which were valued at 7.3 million. And COVID-19 2023 was for the construction of 120 structures, which were valued at 7.7 million. In respect of COVID-19-2020-1, the team established that out of 100 units, the service provider built only 97 units. And in respect of COVID-19-2020-2, the team established that out of the 115 units, the service provider did not deliver at all. The SIU sent a letter recommending the termination of the contract, and BCMM confirmed that this contract was terminated. In respect of COVID-19-2020-3, the team established that only 47 out of the 120 units were built by the service provider. The service provider indicated that they are waiting for BCM to give them instruction to build structure in case of emergency. The SIU further established that there were duplicate payments amounting to 1.3 million in respect of COVID-19-2020-1 made to the service provider. In addition, the service provider duplicated beneficiaries and was paid for this duplication in the amount of 161,000. The same service provider was overpaid an amount of 107,000 after they submitted incorrect completion certificate. The total value of this overpayment is 1.5 million. The SIU sent a letter recommending the termination of the contract in respect of COVID-19-2020-3 and is awaiting response from BCMM. Then in terms of the termination of contract, the tender number COVID-19-2020-2 contract was terminated for non-delivery, and which was costing which was to the value of 7.3. And the municipality confirmed that on the 6th of April 2022, this contract was terminated. And in terms of the potential savings, tender number COVID-19-2020-3 termination contract, which was to the value of 7.7, amount which was already paid is 3 million and there's still outstanding 4.7 million. So we also wrote to the municipality that they must not pay the 4.7 million that is still outstanding. Then potential outcome in terms of irregular procurement, that is tender number 19/2020, that is 1 and 3 tender. We have made the following referrals, that is 4 referrals of evidence pointing to Commission of Criminal Acts, which was referred to NPA, and the value is 1.5, and the investigation is estimated to be finalized at the 31st of May. And in terms of irregular procurement, tender 19/2020, 1 and 3, there's also 2 referrals for disciplinary action. And also in the same tender, also there's 2 letters of demand and AOD which was sent to the service provider so that they must pay back the money that have been paid. Then when coming to Mpumalanga Department of Human Settlement, this investigation also was done under Proclamation R23 of 2020. The Mpumalanga Department of Human Settlement embarked on a project aimed at installing and refurbishing borehole as well as the provision and installation of water storage tank at 247 schools in Mpumalanga province. A further 129 communities were identified for the provision and installation of water tanks. The project is included the supply and installation of 11 large-scale water reservoirs. And Mpumalanga Department of Human Settlement appointed 3 service providers, 1 per district to implement the project on a 10-key basis. A service provider was appointed separately for the provision and installation of the reservoir. The project was overseen by a project management unit, that is PMU, at the Mpumalanga Department of Human Settlement. The total budget allocated for the project was 182 million. Summary of the findings to date is that in some cases, attempts were made to drill boreholes but water could not be located. No further attempts were made thereafter if they could not find the water. And in some cases, the borehole had been installed and water tanks provided, but due to the unavailability of electricity in the area, the system does not work and awaiting the provision of a generator. No, not certain who will maintain this generator going forward, provided the required, and also to provide the required diesel and to ensure the safety of the generator. In some cases, sites were identified by the municipality, but no work has been done. A tank collapsed and killed a learner in one of the schools. The contractor is under investigation by SAPS and has been replaced by the department. Large steel tanks, which came at a cost of 5 million each, has been installed by the service provider, but they are not operational. It bear mentioned that when the verification was conducted, it was noted that there were other steel tanks previously provided to the area, which were also not operational. These were vandalized. The process of procuring the service of a QS is underway in the SIU. An investigation will be concluded once the specialist has been brought on board to conduct proper technical assessment of the work undertaken by the Mpumalanga Department of Human Settlement, as well as to consider the BOQ and to determine the extent of payments made to the contractors. Possible outcome, the supply installation of the large steel tanks or reservoir is fruitless and wasteful expenditure, especially since they are not working or operational. NPA and civil referral action against contractors who have not complied with the required specification and has placed the lives of learners at risk will be concluded once we receive the report from the QS. And recommendation for disciplinary action. Next matter now goes to Free State province. In terms of Free State province, we're dealing with the Department of Human Settlement. On 18 October 2018, the SIU received a request from a whistleblower to investigate numerous allegations in respect of the award of a contract by the department to a joint venture for the identification and removal of asbestos from houses within the Free State province and payments made in respect thereof. Proclamation R39 of 2019 was issued, and the investigation conducted by the SIU in terms of this proclamation has been finalized, and final report was submitted to the president. Summary of the finding of this investigation is that procurement process, which resulted in the appointment of the joint venture, was irregular and did not comply with Section 217, Subsection 1 of the Constitution, and therefore the service level agreement entered into between the department and the joint venture was void. Due to the fact that the procurement process was irregular, the expenditure of 230 million that was incurred in respect of the service level agreement constituted irregular expenditure. The amount of 208 million that the department overpaid, that is 230 minus 21.3 million, which is outstanding, the amount for which the service could not have been rendered, constituted fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Evidence showing that an undue gratification amounting to 650,000 was paid by the service provider to a senior official at the department. In terms of the outcomes, we can see that evidence pointing to the criminal conduct, that is corruption against one senior official at the department, was referred to NPA, which the court case against the official and 15 other accused is postponed to 1 June 2022. Evidence pointing to misconduct by four officials at the department was referred for disciplinary action, which is four officials, and one official contract expired at the end of March 2022 before disciplinary action was taken. And in respect of the three officials, the department appointed a firm of attorneys to assess the evidence, and possible disciplinary action is pending the report of the attorney. A restraint order amounting to 300 million was obtained by the asset forfeiture unit, and this is pending the criminal trial. The SIU joined the department and filed an application in the High Court to inter alia have the service level agreement review and set aside and to recover financial losses suffered by the department. The amount of the application is 255 million. Application was issued on the 17th of February 2022 and is opposed. The parties are exchanging pleadings and the matter is ongoing in the High Court. Then the next matter still in the Free State is in relation to still in the same matter, the investigation is finalized and we are continue to support the remedial action in terms of criminal case, disciplinary action and civil action. The next matter in the Free State is pertaining to the Department of Free State Human Settlement, also pertaining to the R23 of 2020. On 9 September 2020, the SIU received allegation from whistleblower about the irregular appointment of a service provider to contract temporary shelter in Maluti Apopung, Machabeng, and Mangaung in order to provide social distancing. And the SIU investigated the allegation in terms of proclamation R23 of 2020. In terms of this matter, the investigation is finalized. And summary of the finding are as follow. The procurement process followed by the department in procuring the services from the service provider was irregular in that it was not fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, cost-effective, and therefore not compliant with the prescript of Section 217, subsection 1 of the Constitution. In terms of the outcome of the investigation, evidence pointing to the criminal conduct against one senior official at the department was referred to NPA. And in terms of the status, a criminal case, which is Park Road Case 572/02/2021, was registered and investigated by the DPCI. And with regard to evidence pointing to misconduct by one senior official at the department was also referred for disciplinary action. And the official's contract expired at the end of March 2022 before disciplinary action was taken. The SIU filed an application in the Special Tribunal to inter alia, review the awarding of the contract, declare the agreement void, and have it set aside in order to recover losses suffered by the department. And the value of the contract is 151 million. The update in terms of this matter application was issued on 21 February 2022 and served. To date, the matter remained unopposed and the SIU will set the matter down for hearing. The SIU will apply for hearing date on the 30th of May 2022. Status also, SIU investigation has been finalized and SIU is continued to support ongoing remedial action, that is in terms of criminal case, disciplinary, and civil action. Next matter pertains to Proclamation R22 of 2016, Lepelle Northern Water and Gauteng Department of Human Settlement. On this matter, Chair, the proclamation consists of the two entities, which is Lepelle Northern Water and Gauteng Department of Human Settlement. But this presentation will only concentrate on the Department of Gauteng Human Settlement. In terms of the proclamation, the schedule of the proclamation, it says the investigation was to investigate the appointment of the LTE consulting by the department to render services to the department in respect of that tender number, which is for Sweetwater Kanana Park Extension 6, which was for the reticulation network. The construction of the Sweetwater reticulation network for water and sewer and payments made to the LTE in the manner that was not fair and contrary to applicable legislation, manual and policies of the department. And in terms of the status of the investigation pertaining to Gauteng Department of Human Settlement, the investigation is complete and the outcomes of the investigation are as follows. SIU has instituted civil litigation and on 29 March 2018 to set aside the contract to the value of 108 million. The case number is 22781/18 and has been issued out of the Gauteng High Court. The respondents are opposing the matter. The respondents have not filed the opposition, the opposing papers within the prescribed time limit, and the SIU briefed counsel to draft notice to compel the respondent to file and serve its opposing paper. The SIU will apply for hearing date if the respondent do not comply by the 23rd of June 2022. Still under the outcome, referrals of evidence pointing to the Commission of Criminal Act, referrals to NPA in respect of the former DG was made for possible institution of criminal proceeding for contravention of Section 38, subsection 1, subsection A and I, and 1 and 2 of the PFMA on 15 November 2017. And referrals to NPA in respect of one official for corruption was also made on the 25th of April 2018. Status of the investigation, referral also was made to NPA and AFU in respect of 7 Gauteng Department of Human Settlement officials or entity for corruption on 3 April 2018. And referral also was made to SARS on 6 March 2018 relating to a false tax clearance certificate of the appointed contractors and the corruption relating to the above 7 officials or entity. 3 disciplinary referrals supporting charge of misconduct in respect of 3 Gauteng Department of Human Settlement officials was made on 13 November 2017. Update will be obtained from the department and will update the committee. And referrals of evidence to Construction and Industry Development Board was made on the 10th of November 2017. The investigation has been concluded and the presidential report was signed off and submitted on the 20th of September 2018. SIU will follow up on the referrals so that we can update the committee when we meet next time so that we can give them as to what happened to some of these matters. Then, Chair, we come to the new allegation received as requested that we need to indicate any allegation received in terms of HDA. We can refer as SIU received allegation of corruption and procurement irregularities as follows. There's allegation in relation of national HDA, and there's also another allegation that is received that has been received from the Free State Department of Human Settlement. And the allegation are under consideration by the SIU Case Assessment Committee. And after they have assessed the matter, they will advise whether we should apply for a proclamation so that we can able to investigate this allegation. That is the last slide from me, Chairperson. I'll hand over to Advocate Mutibi. Thank you.
Mr. Lakhato, thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable Chair and honorable members, that's our presentation, but I just want to maybe close off with the following observations. And perhaps before I do that, I may have skipped to introduce the provincial head for the SIU in Limpopo, Mr. Msimanga, who was the one who was leading the investigations there in Limpopo. Apologies for that. Honorable Chair and members, you'd see that almost all of the matters that we're presenting on have been really conducted. The investigations were conducted under Proclamation R20 of 2022, which are the ones relating to the procurement irregularities and the corruption that we found out as a result of the procurement processes to mitigate the pandemic COVID-19. With the exception of the one in Free State, which is about the asbestos, the replacement of the asbestos, that was under a different proclamation. And you would see there that so that we are comprehensive to the Honorable Committee, we included even the human settlement one in Gauteng relating to Sweetwater. Those are all the matters in our books where we had received allegations. The new allegations are under consideration, and we will ensure that we assess them speedily, process them through the proclamation that will be signed, and investigations will be done. But Chair, the presentation, as the Honourable Committee can see, that it really indicates that there was a wanton disregard of procurement processes and irregularities during procurement, in all of these areas where we've investigated. Where they related to procurement under the state of disaster to mitigate the pandemic, it is clear that we have really found that there was disregard of the processes that were related to that process of state of disaster. The state of disaster did not in any way entitle anyone to disregard the prescribed processes. And we have found that there has really been wanton disregard. And in some instances, evidence do point that the disregard was fueled by corrupt intentions and the intentions to profiteer on the part of the service providers. In fact, in some other departments, in one department of health in one of the provinces, we found that the service providers had made a markup of about 833%, which is really, really unacceptable. The Honorable Committee will see that the evidence also pointed out misrepresentations, particularly in various investigations, but you'll see it coming out clearly in the Limpopo presentation, where we have also found out there's misrepresentation even of CVs, you know, and there we are saying the internal officials, those who were responsible for the procurement process, whether it's BEC, honorable members, that we have found evidence pointing to poor service delivery, poor or non-delivery in terms of contracted services or incomplete services. And that really indicates that someone in the department should have made sure that there's delivery, but that did not happen. And that is really something that we looked at, and as a result, most of these referrals for disciplinary action points to those who are supposed to have really executed their functions. And on the service provider side, there's litigation, then there's also criminal action to ensure that there's consequence management generally. Perhaps on the Eastern Cape presentation, I just wanted to explain a few terminologies which my colleague went through. There's areas where we indicated that the municipality agreed to terminate the contract. In that instance, we do advise, based on our reading of the contract and the irregularities that we found, and in that case, they give notice to the service provider, and then the contract is terminated. That is a speedy way of ensuring that the municipality does not continue to have liabilities under that contract. And then there's a mention of the AOD. I thought, let me explain it, because while the committee could know what AOD means, it's really the acknowledgement of debt. And that we do in instances where the service providers whom we point the irregularities to, and they agree that they've either been overpaid or, you know, paid unduly, they acknowledge, and then we sign an acknowledgement of debt so that they can pay back the money, as my colleague said. And then there's another terminology which my colleague referred to in the Mpumalanga presentation, where we said BOQ, and apologies that we did not explain it in full, is the bill of quantities, in terms of which the quantity surveyor, the QS stands for quantity surveyor. We really would like to make sure that we come to a scientific finding on the quantity that the department has lost, so that when we undertake the recovery process, we undertake it on a scientifically determined liability. On the Free State matters, as you can see, that the asbestos matter is underway. The investigation is complete. We pulled in the Hawks, and NPA has now taken the matter to court. We are at the High Court to recover the civil recoveries. But Honorable Chair, in closing, I want to just make a comparison. If you look at the Gauteng Human Settlement recovery process, which we instituted in 2018, we instituted that in the High Court. And this is what I want to say now. Once we realized that there's delays in the High Court, we started the process that ultimately resulted in the president proclaiming the special tribunal. And we have seen that the special tribunal has added huge value. We are now avoiding the delays that we have experienced in the High Court. But there is some traction, as you can see, that we will be applying for a trial date. But still, from 2018 to 2022, we're talking about 4 years or so of the process, which really does not give us, that quick recovery process. And the delay in the High Court is simply because we were also queuing there with other litigants in the High Court. The Special Tribunal deals mainly with the matters that are investigated by the SIU. I'll stop here, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the leadership of the SIU for taking your time to come and give us the presentation. Mm-hmm. I think when we're dealing with the adoption of the agenda, there are areas where we made a bit of a mistake on the issue of the deliberation, because it is very important that we separate the department from the SIU report. Now, what we will do, will allow members to come in if there's an agreement on that smaller amendment of the mistake that was made, to engage on the presentation made by the SIU. Then we'll move to the next presentation of the department. I don't know if
Chairperson, Honorable Powell.
Honorable Powell.
Chairperson, the amendment that we made to the agenda was to subjoin the deliberations after the two presentations had been presented to the committee. It was to remove item 6, which was a deliberation directly after the SIU presentation. So I think that the agreement was to move straight on to the next presentation.
Chairperson. Please raise your hands before you come in.
Chair, I have a problem of my hand not being seen. I'm using a phone, which has got some limitations. That's why I just jumped. If you may pardon me for that approach, which is not professional in the sense. I really apologize. My hand is not seen. It is up even now, and you are unable to see it. Can I make that apology for the day? Chair. Yes, a proposal was made by Honorable Powell, which the committee adopted as such. But on a second thought, SIU is an external institution which has got its brief to us, And the second item is an internal debate of the department. So it makes sense, therefore, to separate the two. I would imagine that when a mistake has been identified and acknowledged, that will be accepted as such. I do want to support your view, Acting Chair, that we need to separate the two. Apologies.
Chairperson, on a point of order, it's Honourable Powell.
Honourable Nancy, Honourable Powell, please be patient with other members when they speak.
That's fine.
Sorry, I'll see the Senate.
Thanks.
Yes, we adopted as such, but you picked an error on the side. And I think here and now in the committee, we're making an apology and amendment to say let's separate the two. I want to agree with you, Acting Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other view contrary to...
I think F is that one. Which one are you? E. Yeah.
Advocate Masute.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I've just boarded my flight because I'm required to attend the session this afternoon. So I have 5 minutes before I switch off my phone. If you would allow me, I would support the last speaker that let's deal with the SIU so that we can free them, because the rest is really internal to the PCO. And if you agree with me, I just wanted to claim a bit of privilege here, having been responsible for the SIU for the 5 years that of my stint in the justice portfolio, the executive. If you'll allow me to proceed and indulge me under those circumstances. Firstly, just to greet Advocate Mutibi, who, by the way, was appointed during my term, on a light note. But just to raise one issue with him, and that is the fact that during our public hearings, as well as our oversight visits, there is a recurrence of gross transactions in human settlements at all three spheres of government. And the issue of accountability is hampered by the fact that national, strictly speaking, has no authority to take action against transgressions in the other two spheres, and the same applies to province. So there's a disjuncture there in the sense that if, for example, a municipality chooses not to take action against their own councillors, who, unlike in the other spheres where some of this procurement is done by officials, it seems as if at local government level, pardon me for the background, this is done by councillors in some instances, things like allocation of houses. So my worry is that you then get burdened with all kind of small cases and sundry from all these three spheres. Is there an alternative way to manage this in terms of the capacities required, in terms of the volume that we're dealing with here? Have you thought about this, and what do you think is the alternative way of dealing with this, just to be able to ensure that impunity does not persist purely on the basis that there's simply no human possibility that you could round up all these thousands and thousands of transgressions all the way down to the hundreds of municipalities where these things take place? What is the strategy around this? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
and I only have 3 minutes before I have to switch off my phone.
Thank you. I've allowed Advocate Masuta to come in because of the prior apology he sent. I'll open for hands for members to come in on the report presented.
Chairperson, it's Honourable Paul. I stood on a point of order.
Okay.
This committee has adopted an agenda. It's already been adopted. So if we're going to amend it, then it needs to be tabled again for adoption. I'd like to ask that we follow process in this committee, please.
We have all received the agenda and the way amendments that were made, and there's a by that one amendment of on the agenda which we all have. I think there's consensus on that amendment. That is retabling the agenda, unless you want us to flag the agenda here again so that you see the item number 6 that we are restating. Is that your request,
Chair? I'm not going to be laborious about it, but we've had one speaker who has suggested an amendment. It hasn't been agreed to. The reason that I'm concerned is that some of the submissions that I have to make are for both the HDA and the SIU together. So I would like to ask then that if we do proceed to just going straight into questions up for the SIU, that the SIU remains in the room, in the meeting, for the HDA's presentation, because there will be questions to them from my office at that point. And I would like to ask that we do not then release them at this stage, because there are material discussions that need to take place in regards to the presentation of the HDA that I certainly require the SIU in the room for. Thank you, Chairperson.
Look, these are two. Is that an order?
Okay. You see my hand?
I don't see your hand, but I've allowed it because of an apology. You can come in.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue raised by Honorable Power makes sense on the second thought of her explanation, of which initially it was not made. But I do request that we do not imprison SIU because of some internal presentation on HDI, which they did not prepare for. I would imagine that the department is well capacitated to note all of those issues. And then if they have to go to the SIU, we do as such. I am pleading with Honorable Power that please, let's not imprison the external people. They've got other duties to do in terms of their function. And also, the department has a responsibility to look on issues on its own, outside other external bodies which are not involved per now. I do plead with you, good sir, Honorable Power, that let's agree on the second amendment that we've done on the agenda. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Is there any other hand that wants to speak on this issue before I summarize?
Yes, Chair. I want to.
Just to reinforce the point that's just been made, Chair, on that point that unless the other hand relates to the same point. Because you see, the thing is, the SIU only acts on proclamations. So anything that Honorable Powell wants to raise has to arise out of a proclamation that the president has issued for the SIU, because that's where they derive their mandate. If it still matters that are with the department, but do not form part of a proclamation that is before the SIU, then the SIU can be expected to be drawn into that or to comment, because that would be outside of their mandate. So let's be mindful of that as well, which is essentially what the last speaker in a way is talking to as well.
Honorable content.
Chair, thank you. I think I've been covered on that regard because honestly, we are not in court. So the SIU was here to give us a briefing on how far they are with the situation. So if we're not happy with what the department or HDA say to us after they have left, then it's something which can be taken further. So it shouldn't be like, I mean, these matters are in court, they're under investigation. So I think for us, the information is enough because the outcome of the courts will come, or the hearings of what's going to happen will get from the outcome of the court. So I would also plead with Honorable Powell that let's continue. And then if there are any further questions, they can be referred to, the department is there, ADA is there, and the minutes, these sessions are being recorded. So it's not something which is, will be hidden, and the public is also listening to us. So thanks, Chair. I think I just wanted to agree with the suggestion that let's continue, let's release the ISU, because they have more work to do to make sure that they get a proper outcome of their cases. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks. I think I've given enough time on this issue. And it's clear that it's consensus that let's deal with the deliberation of what is presented by the SIU now. Then post that, we release them. Then we move to the department to give us a presentation. Now I'm going to move to hands that wants to speak to the report delivered by the SIU. Can I get hands?
My hand is up, Chair.
I've raised my hand. I have raised it a long time ago.
Oh, I don't know why on my screen it does not show. Let me just open all of it, the whole screen, so that maybe, but I've opened the whole screen. Okay, no, it's fine. If I've not noted you, without disrupting, you can come in. I'll start with Honorable Nancy, then I'll move to Honorable Shelly. If there's any other hand, you'll highlight when the two have spoken. Are we happy with that? Okay. Honorable Nancy?
Thank you, Chairperson. I apologize for my today's limitation. Thank you for the presentation from the SIU. Just to say how I wish that the department is really listening on the unethical conduct that is done by administration. I raise administration because, Chair, the department, when it appoints anyone to do work for it, it cannot abdicate its responsibility. It has got to oversee that somebody does the work well. But what it becomes a challenge here is that the department has appointed an implementing arm, which is an HDA. I want to raise a question to the department through you, Chair. Does the department believe that the HDA had all the tools? Is it well structured to do what it wants HDA to do? Because a scope, when it's given, you have to follow the principles of project management. And the department has got all its eyes to make sure that is happening, which is HDA in this instance. How does it happen that there are such wrongs that are done by contractors to rip off the money of the people of this country. Because the issue of accountability, efficiency, effectiveness solely resides on the administration to protect our people. Now, I want to hear from the department, where are these weaknesses are coming from in the department's present? Lastly, the issue raised now by Advocate Masuta is making me to be very, very afraid. It's very scary that the National Department has nothing to do with how province and local government behaves, even in terms of the money that is sent to those spheres for housing development. And therefore, it cannot take them into task when any wrongs have happened. So I also need a clarity on that. I support the advocate, he knows these things well, but how does it happen? HDA is an implementing arm, misuse the money of the National Department. And HDA cannot be taken to task. Province, local government cannot be taken to task. I may not be speaking on the issues that have been raised. I think they are technical issues that we're being told of how bad we are as government in terms of utilization of community funds. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Number two.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Am I audible, Chairperson? Chairperson?
Yes, you are audible.
Oh, thank you. My first question is directed to the SIU. Is the SIU going to recommend that consequence management be applied to the department officials who fail to do timeless, continuous monitoring to the provinces who disregarded prescribed procurement processes in the awarding of tenders? And then the second question is directed to the department. We have long advised the department to capacitate or empower HDA to do their work effectively. And the department promised that they were going to do so. In case the department have done so, if after realizing that the HDA do not perform their work effectively, there is still irregular expenditure and wasteful expenditure that is incurred due to them not doing their work effectively, why does the department not take the HDA into task? Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Is there number three? I'm not seeing hands here. I don't know. Okay, I can see Honorable Powell.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Let me just start by saying that I think one of the reasons that this the HDA, where we see so much of the corruption arising from, is in such a mess, and why we see the levels of rank corruption that continue in this department and its entities unabated, is because of the failure of this very parliamentary committee to genuinely do its work and to engage in rigorous oversight as per the prescripts of the Constitution and the rules of Parliament. And I think that this morning's desperation to release the SIU when they've set aside time between 9 to 1 to appear and account and provide detailed reports to Parliament, I think that the desperation of some of the committee members to release them early before the HDA's internal remedial presentation is presented is indicative of that failure. Nonetheless, let me address the SIU. I just wanted to say that the SIU is remarkable. The speed and the haste with which the SIU acts and the professionalism is truly world class, and it stands out in South Africa given that so many of our oversight branches and law enforcement agencies are just so very broken. So thank you to your team and all of your investigators on the ground for the work that you do and the haste with which you act. I've got a few questions, not many. On the matter of civil recoveries, can the SIU outline how your teams go about recovering such monies, especially where the contractors have gone bust as a result of their contracts being halted? Then given the scale of the irregularity, the negligence, the fraud, corruption, and the collusion that's been highlighted in your presentation has taken place since the onset of the COVID pandemic, what is the SIU's view? And this is why I wanted and do want the SIU in the room for the HDA's presentation, but what is the SIU's view on the internal condemnation committee of the Housing Development Agency having not found any evidence of fraud, corruption, or malfeasance in regards to the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure that's been detailed by the external auditor for the financial year in which much of this corruption highlighted in the SIU's report took place? So, I mean, I understand that the SIU referred or dealt with individual matters that were referred, but that those funds would obviously contribute to the fruitless, wasteful and irregular expenditure incurred. But we have, on the converse, the Internal Condemnation Committee of the HDA that will be telling Parliament in their presentation that their Condemnation Committee has not found any evidence of fraud and corruption. And then would the SIU consider reviewing the findings of the various internal risk audit and condemnation committees of the HDA, so the internal committees, with a view to identifying fraud and corruption that these internal committees may have missed? And if so, would this require a new proclamation, or is this within the ambit of the work that the SIU can do? My concern is that, firstly, the HDA is not being audited by the Auditor General, and secondly, these internal committees. This is why again I wanted the SIU in the room, because the HDA can answer at the point that they've given their presentation about whether or not the external individuals appointed to the condemnation committee or the internal composition, the individuals that make up these committees, have got, for example, the requisite forensic audit skills. Because in my view, based on what I've seen and what's been presented and what we know, the findings of the SIU in terms of just how severe the corruption is, for example, your findings on bid adjudication, committee members, for example, on the Aventino contracts, those were HDA officials, it doesn't add up. So the question really is, will the SIU consider reviewing the findings of the internal committees of the HDA? If so, my office will make the necessary referrals. Can this be done under the existing proclamation, or was a new proclamation required? Thanks, Chair. That's all for the SIU.
I don't see another hand. Oh, is it Honorable Braid or Braid?
Yes, Chairperson Braid Herring.
Okay, you can come in.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to understand from the SIU, they refer to two or three proclamations, but the proclamation R23 of 2020, is that proclamation still an active proclamation, and it relates to the 29 or the projects that were identified for de-densification arising out of COVID-19. That identification of projects for de-densification, there were 29 projects that were supposed to be completed across South Africa. And in reply to my question to the minister recently, she indicated a number of projects, many more than what have been reported here, have not been completed or without any explanation. So So if there are allegations of misconduct related to other projects, is that Proclamation 2320 still available to be used for investigation of the projects that were identified for de-densification where funding was made and where no projects were actually implemented? As I said, there were 29. I think the SIUs reported on about 5 or 6. And there are about 10 or 14 that have still not yet been completed, despite the emergency procurement process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other hand apart from the hands that I've not seen that have went up? Okay. If there's none, I think I must have time to allow the SIU to come in. But before I do that, I've got a few questions. One on the issue of the progress in relation to the advance payments matter on the Free State. How are they dealing with that? The other one is on the SIU take on the matter raised by the Zondo Commission that are implicating the department. Now, I just wanted to check on all of those two issues. Thanks. The SIU can come in.
Honorable Chair, thank you. Thank you so much for all the insightful questions. We really appreciate that. I want to just start off with the questions and comments raised by Honorable Masuta with the public engagements that the Honorable Committee conduct, and there's indications of irregularities and accountability not being really executed. So when we investigate in a particular state institution, and by the way, our investigations are guided by the main objective of our legislation, which is to investigate maladministration, malpractice, and corruption in state or in relation to state institutions. So the definition of a state institution would relate to a municipality, a provincial department, a state-owned entity, national department. Now, when we investigate in a particular state institution and we find irregularities, we do then. Can I pause a bit, Chair? Okay. So when we find irregularities in a specific state institution, whether it's a department, municipality, or provincial department, we then go further and inquire and gather evidence. Who is accountable or responsible? And we do that inquiry based on the process that we have followed. If it's a process of procurement, which in the main, yeah, we're dealing mainly 98% or so with procurement matters. Now, the questions would be, from the onset, as you would have seen, we've actually just summarized the investigations, outcomes, and findings. But the main report will take you through what the investigators looked at. They review the procurement documents, and they then check who authorized at what stage. And that's why we are able to point to the BEC members, and we are able to then go up from there and check the accountability of any of the managers, the accountability of any of the accounting officers, or including executive authorities for that matter. So now, with relation to projects that are done in the province based on the national department's mandate, we have similar observations that if the HDA, for example, which is a national state-owned entity with presence in various offices, conduct projects in the provinces or in the municipalities, or even almost allow or delegate anyone in those state institutions to carry out those responsibilities. Then we would then make an inquiry of the extent to which the HTA would have delegated. And by the way, the legal position on delegation is that it doesn't exonerate the accountable person. So the HTA would remain accountable. If we find that there's irregularities at a provincial level, then we would have to hold everyone in that process to account. Now, what I'm really saying is that the principles of accountability point to a specific process in a specific state institution, whether it's a department or a municipality or a state-owned entity. Now, I just need to mention here to the Honorable Committee, I made a note, it's a pity Honorable Masuta had to leave, but for the record and for the information of the Honorable Committee, we have identified this as an issue that the accountability and execution of our referrals remains a concern, particularly on the referrals for disciplinary actions. And we are pleased that there is a process to further monitor the implementation of the SIU referrals at the presidency level. And I'm informed that they will be presenting to SCOPA soon in terms of what that mechanism would do. So they will then take all of those referrals and all of those findings and then inquire and find out who has not done what, failing which, then there should be actions taken. So I'm just really mentioning this as a measure to say there is a concerted effort, you know, at a presidency level to help execute accountability and ensure that the referrals are acted upon. I want to get now to recommendations against officials. Yes, Honorable Member, I think our presentation has indicated quite a number of findings against officials. For example, in Limpopo, there's about 6 officials. I've confirmed with my colleagues in Limpopo that those referrals have already been made for disciplinary action to be taken. So what we need to do is to ensure that we follow up to ensure that the accounting officer takes action against those officials. Honorable Powell, can SIU outline how the civil litigation process? Right. My colleague, Dr. Wells, who's the chief legal, is here as well, if he needs to add. But what we do is when we find that there's irregularities, a certain procurement process was irregular and a contract was awarded based on that. So what we do is that, as we have said in some of the presentations, we then commence with the process to institute civil litigation. And that process is as follows. We prepare the papers, of course, the information and the evidence, and more often we appoint external legal counsel to then through the state attorney, and the legal counsel takes our case to the court. As I indicated earlier, we used to do that in the high court, but now we do it in the special tribunal. And in the papers, we side off. Firstly, we get the department or the municipality to be a co-applicant so that they can also be part of cancelling this contract and recovering. Now, the other parties that are cited as respondents is the service providers, as the Honorable has correctly said, and the instruction now to the civil litigation team is that we should really go and cite the directors of these companies. And I say that to respond to the observation made by the Honorable member, is that what happens when the company goes bust? We have seen that it's almost a practice, and in many instances, really informed by unjust objectives on the part of the directors, that they would then liquidate these companies. So, and when the company is liquidated, it has gone bust, it really means that it probably doesn't have assets from which we could recover. But then when we cite the directors, we could then have the opportunity to even proceed against the directors themselves and recover from these directors themselves, so that they don't defeat our objective of recovery by liquidating the company. We've done that, and we are also considering to do that even where we restrain the companies. We advise that this is the what's referred to as blacklisting. When we blacklist, the view that we have also, the observation we have seen, is that we'll blacklist the company and the company will go bust and liquidate it, but the same directors will crop up somewhere in a different company. So it defeats the purpose, and we have observed that, and we are now acting against it, so that the directors themselves could be held to account. And there's also a further legal process where we could also even hold the directors or apply for the directors to be declared delinquent. Of course, it's a legal process which the court has to pronounce on. So that's generally how we conduct the civil litigation, and to ensure that there's mitigation in the civil litigation process, so that we don't end up with a hollow judgment where we cannot recover. But just to be comprehensive with other considerations, is that during the litigation process, what we also do is that we would do preservation orders. When we find that, I mean, the teams would do a comprehensive financial analysis of an individual or of a company, and where there's a legal basis, we would then preserve the assets of the company, so that ultimately when we get the orders, we are able to then have recourse to the assets that we have freezed. You would have seen that an example in the Free State matter, where through the AFU, we've preserved about 300 million, which we will have recourse to when we get the order. So that's really, in brief, a general outline of our litigation framework. Now, with regard to the internal processes, including the condemnation committee that the Honorable refers to, we would obviously have to then go and make a check and finding on what the functions of this committee are, and what have they pronounced themselves on. And if they pronounced themselves and condoned of any other item or matter that falls within the current proclamation, we will be able to look at it. And more often, these committees are created by the accounting officers. They assist them to make decisions. Ultimately, it remains the decision of the accounting officer. So it does remain an administrative decision by the accounting officer, which can be subjected to a review. and we can be able to do that, of course, we will assess legal basis falls within the proclamation. We should be able to act on those. Where, of course, it falls outside of the proclamation, the process that we take is to then amend the current proclamation. And the amendment of the current proclamation goes through the same process. It gets signed off by the president as well, just to ensure that our legal mandate is appropriate. Where there's a need for a new proclamation, it would probably be pointing to totally new allegations, and then we also prepare a proclamation to do that. So whichever way, we would be able to look at any referrals that are made, and we should be able to act on those. And then Honorable Brad Heron, Proclamation R23 of 2020, we have submitted the final report to the president, but of course we did say in that report that if there are, because we continue to get some allegations even after that report, and we cannot turn those allegations away. We are enjoined by law to investigate when we get the allegations. So if there are still other allegations that fall within this proclamation, we are legally enabled to still look at those allegations. So we should be able to do that. Honorable Chair, the Zondo Commission outcomes, we've got an internal governance committee in SIU, which we formed while the Zondo Commission was underway. We interacted with them on various matters. So at the moment where we are is we are going through all the reports of the Zondo Commission, and we are going through them meticulously to say where recommendations are covered in a specific proclamation. We are then able to process it and make sure that we implement those recommendations, whether it's both going through the civil litigation to recover in a typical example is the Free State human settlement matter, which also came up in the Zondo Commission, and they have specifically said government should consider instituting civil litigation to recover the funds. So we are able to report that already we have instituted that civil litigation action. So we should be able to report from that recommendation that is being implemented. On the other matters, we will also just assess them and put them under each and every proclamation on what is it that needs to be done. The advance on the advance payments in the Free State, with your permission, Chair, I don't have sufficient information. I don't want to mislead the committee. If my colleague, Ms. Chabalala, who is the provincial head, if you have information on this readily, are you able to brief the committee? If not, Chair, we can respond to the committee in writing relating to this advance payment. Ms. Chabalala, I hope you can hear. Do you have the information?
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you, HOU. HOU, I would request that maybe we look into that one because the information is not readily available. I'll be in consultation now with the HO, with the head of investigation, and let you know.
Okay. Right. With your permission, Chair, we don't want to mislead the committee here. We want to look into this matter appropriately, and we will respond in writing to the committee. Thank you, Chair. I hope I've covered all the questions that were raised, but otherwise we can take more questions if there are any.
Thank you very much for your responses. I will allow members who are not clarified to seek clarity on issues that are not clarified on. Those who are not clarified, I'll allow them. But if you are all clarified, then I will thank the SIU and release you. But let's give time to members. Are you all clarified, members, on what the SIU is?
Chair.
Honorable Nenzi. Now other hands after this. Which other member? Going once, twice, gone. Okay. Honorable Lindsay. Honorable Lindsay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Thank you to the clarifications made by Dr. Motibe on the areas of concern that we had. But just two questions that I couldn't get him well on his response. We learn in this process. The issue raised by Advocate Masuta about the role of National Department to scrutinize province and local government on their potential transgressions. What does that mean in terms of this program, in this project that is being led by SIU? I think I raised many issues initially. I'm not going back to that. The second one is that issues that have raised Dr. Motibe, at the end of this program, are you able to get a clear recommendation in terms of your assessment, in terms of your investigation? What would be the legal procedures and justifiable by department that they should have followed to avoid this quagmire? Is that in your mandate to really assist the department not to have the same again? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I'm satisfied about the first question that I asked to SIU. The second question was directed to the department. I'm assuming that the department, maybe after the second presentation, it will answer my question.
Please repeat your...
Hello?
Please repeat what you said.
I said, we have long advised the department to capacitate the HDA. And I'm hoping, we are all hoping that they've done so, they've empowered them to do their work effectively. And then if they have done so, after the department realizing that the HDA is not doing their work effectively, why are they not taking them to task? That was my second question, which was referred to the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thanks. SIU?
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just starting with the question around, again, the role of the National Department. Say if I use the HDA, which is an agency of the department, there would be legal provisions around the HDA, and our view is that the department should also continue to satisfy itself that the HDA executes its work appropriately. There should be appropriate monitoring mechanisms, reporting mechanisms, so that if there's a failure, it should be picked up and reported on appropriately, and actions should be taken. So the focus then would be whether those mechanisms are in place. If they're not in place, why are they not in place? And then, so we are able to recommend to the department. And that's on the slide that deals with our outcomes. There's a bottom line that says systemic recommendations. We are able to recommend to the department where we have discovered the inefficiencies or weaknesses in the system, so that we are able to recommend to the department on what is it that they should do to avoid this happening in future. So the department and the AGA, and the AGA probably to the province, to the provincial department. Again, if the AGA has activities in the provinces, the assumption is that the AGA would have a legal instrument that regulates their service to the provinces. They wouldn't just go in there and do the work. There should be some agreement between the AGA and the department for them to execute a certain project. So that project also should be monitored according to what HDA should execute on. And this is what we also looked at in all of this area. So if the execution is not in accordance with the agreement that's in place, then someone has to be held to account. Because I'm informed that HDA has got offices in the provinces, then from the HDA side and from the department side, there should be monitoring mechanisms that are put in place. And I'm sure the department can probably expand on that. But what we do when we investigate, we first check the legal framework. What is it that they've done, what they've put in place, to monitor the project so that delivery can be monitored. In the absence of that, we are able to pronounce ourselves and say, ATA and the department, this is what you should have done, and you can do it to avoid this from occurring in future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, SIU. Honorable Shaili, I believe it's an old hand, the one you have raised now. Okay. With that waste of time, we'll release the SIU. And I believe that everyone has been responded to. Then we'll move to the next item where the department will be giving us a presentation. Thank you very much, SIU.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you.
Thank you. Department?
Oh. Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to you, to all members of the Portfolio Committee, the Department of Human Settlements team led by Director General Mr. Mbulelo Changana, the HDA led by Chairperson of the Board, Dr. Chaliti Rajitanga, and all officials present, Chair. The Department of Human Settlements is here today on invitation to brief the Portfolio Committee on the progress made by the Housing Development Agency in dealing with external audit outcomes. Chairperson, the HDA has come a long way over the last few months. Things are looking up, the entity is much more stable and is working tirelessly to improve efficiency. And the process of appointing the CEO and the CFO has gone through cabinet. Now, on the issue on hand, the external audit found HDA to have weak internal controls in supply chain management, project finance and finance. The audit flagged 28 findings, and the entity has since been working hard to implement its audit actions plans to clear them. and in the process make sure the findings do not reoccur. To date, 86% of audit findings have been resolved. And this includes all supply chain findings, and strict controls have been implemented so that the same is not repeated again. To manage irregular expenditure, Chair, the entity has put in place early warnings method, including the establishment of condonation committee, which among other things will facilitate and advise on action deemed appropriate to conclude individual cases based on merit. And that condonation will also be checking if everything is recovered, that is, money is recovered. And lastly, Chair, without wasting any time of members of Parliament, the findings that has not been implemented is the creditors with debit balances incorrectly classified as payables. There is a pending investigation underway to ascertain root cause and extent of the inconsistencies. This could, however, be resolved soon, Chair. Chair, without wasting time, I was just trying to give, you know, the analysis of what the presentation will be talking on. Chairperson, I would like also to hand over to the DG and tell us a person who's going to do the presentation. Definitely is going to be the HDA. And thank you for giving me the opportunity, Chair, to do this analysis. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DM.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister, and the Chair of HDA, colleagues. We've noted a number of questions that were raised during the SIU presentation, and I think we'll be able to respond to those questions after the presentation by HDA. I think it was maybe an oversight on our side not to invite the AJODs of the affected provinces, but it's not all lost. I think we will still be able to follow up on some of the referrals that were directed to provincial departments, AJODs, Free State, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and Gauteng. But we will be able to respond to most of the questions that were raised around the investigation by the SIU. Honorable Chair, without wasting time, I'm going to ask maybe the Chair of HDA would want to introduce the topic and then hand over to the acting CEO of HDA, Meng Washeng. I will hand over to the Chairperson of HDA at this stage. Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Members of Parliament. Good morning, Deputy Minister Metswete, the Director General of the Department of Human Settlements, as well as all the senior managers and fellow board members at the HDA and the officials of the HDA. Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for today, Honorable Malachi. We thank you for giving us the opportunity to come back to the Portfolio Committee and update on progress that is being made on addressing the external audit findings. The presentation will be made by our acting CEO, Mayor Daphne Washeng. I think what is critical to mention is that the the progress that is made, that is being made on addressing these findings, is part of the ongoing stabilization of the HDA as an important institution, an important implementing agent within the human settlement portfolio, with vast mandates and responsibilities that it undertakes. Quite a huge number of interventions that the HDA makes on behalf of the national department, on behalf of provinces, departments of human settlements, on behalf of metros, and of course, in the process of undertaking those responsibilities, there will be matters that we have to deal with that are flagged by auditors, where some transgressions to regulations, the PFMA, have been found and need to be dealt with. I think what I would like to say is we do not at all hold a very light any irregular expenditure that happens at the HDA, because it affects and delays service delivery on the ground. The reports by the SIU paint to projects that have had to be halted as a result of transgressions on the procurement of service providers to do this work, as well as some that relate to shoddy implementation or quality of the work that was expected to be done. So as the board of the HDA, we take this as very, very serious, and we try our best to ensure that this irregular expenditure does not recur, but most importantly, that it does not move to the extent of wasteful expenditure and wasteful and fruitful expenditure. Because if it were to get to that level, then we would be undercutting the what is expected of us by the people of this country. I want to ask now for the acting CEO to come in and give a full report, and in doing so, to also deal with the issues that might have arisen, especially to clarify why it is that the HDA has constituted a condonation committee. We will also deal with that because it has already been raised. But bearing in mind that this is not the first time that the HDA is dealing with the matters of actions on irregular expenditure, so we have to take this report in tandem with the presentations we would have done to this committee in October 2021 that would have reported on some of the actions that had already been taken on the 2020-2021 findings. I also just want to echo what the Deputy Minister has said. Part of addressing these issues is to stabilize the management in the HDA. And we are happy to announce here, as we had said in the last meeting with the Portfolio Committee, that we were in the process of appointing a substantive chief executive and CFO. That process has been finalized by Cabinet, and we are in the process now of onboarding them into the organization. We believe that starting June this year, this chief executive will commence with his work, and the CFO will follow accordingly. This is important because some of the transgressions point to the instability that had existed in the management level of the HDA, where we did not have full-time executives, and therefore there were myriad issues of lack of accountability and lack of support from the senior executive to those officials that were given the task to oversee these projects. So we take this step as a very important milestone in ensuring that the HDA is fit for purpose and properly capacitated to undertake its work. The issue of the capacity of the HDA is indeed an ongoing matter. We are involved as the board with and the executive authority in a process of reviewing our organizational structure, because the HDA has grown in leaps and bounds since it was established 12 years ago. It has now received far higher mandates and requests for interventions in the work of the human settlements than when it was established, and therefore requiring a much more capacity than it previously had. That matter is being attended by the board and the executive authority because we cannot do the work that is expected of us with the resources that were there just at the beginning when the HTA was established. That having been said, let me now, with your permission, Chairperson, hand over to our acting CEO to give and provide the full report on the updates and progress made on dealing with external audit findings. Meng Washeng, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson of the Board of HDA. Good morning, Chairperson of Portfolio Committee. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Good morning, members of the Portfolio Committee and colleagues, the Director General of the Housing or Human Settlements Department. I will start by also adding on to what the Chairman has said to say in the previous report that we presented, we went line by line of each one of the findings, explaining exactly what the control deficiencies that were identified were, what the remedial plan was. We detailed the timelines within which we will implement dealing with the findings, as well as who was responsible. So this report, Chairperson, if we could go to the next slide, please. The purpose of this report is to take the Portfolio Committee through an update of how far we are relating to the action plan that we had put in place to clear the 2020-21 external audit findings. Next slide, please. Chair, the HDA obtained a qualified audit opinion for 2020-21 due largely to the project obligations and irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure and the material statements that were identified during the external audit. And these statements pointed out to what the chair was referring to when he said that we had internal control deficiencies and as well as weaknesses in the system, which is why we had to come up with a number of systems and put policies in place and or at least revise the policies that were there, ensuring that the irregular expenditure framework is fully implemented. And we also looked into how we can beef up the processes that we follow within the supply chain management and also project finance and finance so that we do not have those findings that we had recurring. And the HDA as well, on a monthly basis, we are following up on the internal audit, working with the internal audit, we are following up on the action plan. And whatever we say we have done and whatever we say we have achieved, before we submit that to ARC, it gets audited by our internal auditors to say indeed they are satisfied with the portfolio of evidence that we give them. When we say that we have cleared an audit finding, we have put controls in place, we have put measures in place, and then once it is satisfactorily addressed, then only then does it leave the list of items that are being dealt with. Next slide, please. We had a total of 28 findings, and 24 of those have been cleared and they are being implemented. And we are sure that when we start with the audit next month on the 1st of June, we are ready and we will not have repeat findings on those particular items. And three of those findings are partially implemented and one is not implemented. I will take you through in the next slide, please. Under the supply chain management, we had 16 findings. We managed to deal with all the 16 findings and put measures, corrective measures in place and address all of those root causes that we had identified in the previous report that we submitted. Next slide, please. This is the list of those SCM-related audit findings. I would want to go through them. It's 16 of them, and we have managed to identify, we have managed to deal with them. And where, for an example, in number one, where we say there were no BIP documentations to specify evaluation and adjudication criteria, which includes the preference point systems, now we do have that in our documents. Where reasons for deviations for SCM processes did not appear reasonable before any deviation is done, it is taken through serious scrutiny, and we keep a register of all the deviations so that we know when the auditors ask for deviations that occurred through the year, we are able to give them the register. The bid adjudication committee was not formed to adjudicate awards. I think we all know that we have a bid adjudication committee that has been appointed for the full year. We, in terms of our policy, we are allowed to appoint them for 3 years, but we renew that every year. Particular bid, the bid specification committee was not formed to determine the bid specification. If you remember, we explained when we came to the portfolio committee that when we had panels, we took it for granted that the bid specification was done, and the auditors found that to be irregular, and we had to every time, even if you are appointing from the panel, to start with the specification, and we are following that. Contract not awarded to the bidder that scored the highest total number of points, that was that specific finding with that specific contract that was awarded. We make sure that now when contracts are awarded, it is awarded to the highest scoring bidder, and it is checked and thoroughly checked. There was no proof of declaration of interest or SBD4 forms. Now we make sure that the SBD4 forms are issued when we issue the tenders, and it becomes part of the pre-assessment to say if you have not submitted your SBD form, then you are not going to go to the next level of evaluation. So it has been made part of the compulsory returnables. Tender and awards were not advertised on the e-tender publication portal. I think this one we explained last time when we came that the e-portal was down, but talking to the treasury, they then advised that you can just notify them when the portal is down. Quotations and tax compliance. We check tax compliance, and no appointment letter is issued without tax compliance. We run the person or the company on the CSV, and we do not sign any appointment letters when people are not, or when their tax matters are not in order. Quotations and declarations of interest. We had a problem where declarations of interest were not depicted, let me say, were not detected, and because at the time, the auditors were the ones who came and told us that these people are either public servants or whatever when they tendered. So we did not have a system of detecting that, but now we do. awards not published in the government tender bulletin, we do publish our tenders in the tender bulletin. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure register not kept. We have a fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well as a regular expenditure register, and we maintain it, and it is a standard standing item in our meetings. We check it on a regular basis. Non-submission of in-year monitoring reports. We now submit our in-year monitoring reports. Tenders advertised after closing date had lapsed. This as well, we are no longer advertising any tenders after the date had lapsed. And then bid adjudication committee awarded to a bidder other than the one recommended by the evaluation committee. This is where the bid adjudication committee would overrule the bid evaluation committee. We try not to have that, and if there are any deviations for any reason whatsoever, it will have to be under exceptional circumstances, and the accounting authority that is relevant in such matters is the one that would then deal with it. But what is recommended by the bid evaluation committee is then carried by the bid adjudication committee, unless if the bid adjudication committee is not satisfied with what the report that comes out of the bid evaluation committee, will be sent back. The bid advertised for less than 21 days. This was where bids were emergencies, but we tried to have our bids advertised for 21 days. No certificate of independent bid determination or SBD9 was completed. This is also part of the returnable. Next slide, please. So this one now is trying to talk about that condonation committee that was referred to earlier. This committee is trying to deal with matters that are dating back to 2016, because we've had irregular expenditure that has never been condoned. And for condonation to occur, you have to demonstrate that firstly, you assessed the irregular expenditure, you confirmed that indeed there was irregular expenditure, you confirmed that there was non-compliance, then you are saying that yes, whether there is anything that you can recover, and whether there is any fraud, corruption, or misconduct or criminal conduct that is emanating from the incurrence of that irregular expenditure. You're doing that so that you can recommend to the accounting officer and to National Treasury on the next action to take, because there are matters that can be dealt with by the accounting officer in terms of the regulations, but there are matters that are reserved only for the National Treasury, and they cannot be dealt with by the accounting officer or the accounting authority. It has to go to National Treasury. And then where we need to recover, then we start the process of recovery. And then the reason is that if you have not condoned these actions, it remains in the register of irregular expenditure. That is why we have this long list, because it's recurring from prior years. And this committee, if you continue into the next slide, this committee, once the assessment has been done and there has been confirmation of irregular expenditure, then and the determination test is completed and everything, then you are able to refer to the relevant HR unit and to the relevant head for consequence management to take place. And so far, We have dealt with about 20 out of 31 cases for 2020-21. We started with 2020-21 and we are working backwards. And there are cases that have already been referred to myself as the acting CEO for consequence management by this committee and by this team. And I am dealing with those matters. But these are matters that do not have any financial misconduct or fraud or criminal activity. Next slide, please. Now, under project finance, we had two findings. One has been clear, and the other one has been partially implemented. Next slide, please. The one that has been partially implemented, when we had this finding where confirmation for project obligations, the auditor said there's limitation of scope, then they advised that on a monthly basis, you must make sure that your balances and the balances of the provinces as the transferring officers are the same. And every month after you have you are done with your expenditure for that month, you have to then send the report to them, but they have to sign off on the report. So on a monthly basis, we had to accumulate these reports as supporting documentation to our balances, so that what was transferred and what was spent, because we have to take interest into consideration, does balance. What they know is what we know. But this, we are saying it is 90% done, because Gauteng balances have not been finalized. Gauteng has just sent us their report, the bus report, and we are checking it as the finance department, and we are hoping that it will balance. But we are hoping to do it by the 31st of May, because we want, when we start the new audit, we should have dealt with that. The next one was clear. It was the confirmation for project obligations that says that our balances as per our annual financial statements at the time, they did not balance for KZN and Northwest. It has been clear. Next slide, please. Under the finance unit, we had 10 findings. 7 of those have been cleared. 1 is not yet cleared, and 2 are partially implemented. Next slide, please. Now, the one that is partially implemented, it was the one of material adjustments after the submission of the financial statements to the National Treasury. We are only submitting now on the 31st of May. We are hoping that there won't be material adjustments, but we cannot say that it is cleared, because we don't know what is going to come out. But we are working with our internal auditors, and they are assisting us, and we are trying to submit financial statements that will not have material adjustments after submission. And the 4 items, which was project payables, clearing the accounts, and the intercompany transfers, that has been done. The technical and project services expenses, that has been cleared. The land-related costs have been cleared. Repairs and maintenance, travel and accommodation, and other operating expenses have also been cleared. Next slide, please. The other one that is partially implemented is the one of cash and cash equivalents for provinces incorrectly disclosed. As management, we are still trying to make sure that the funds that are in the bank that we are doing on a monthly basis are balancing. I think that Gauteng matter is also affecting us here, but I've got the CFO in the meeting. If I'm saying something wrong, he will be able to correct me. the creditors with debit balances incorrectly classified as payables. This one is not yet implemented. It's still underway. We are working on it, and we are hoping that we will have made progress by the 31st of May. Physical asset count, it has been cleared. Staff receivables, differences between supporting documents and recorded amounts, it has been cleared. Property, plant and equipment, it has been cleared as well. Now, this one, Chair, we disputed it in the last audit, but the auditors insisted on keeping it there. They were saying that the board composition was not in line with the HTA Act and the requirements. And we disputed that, but it remained. There's a section in our Act which stipulates how many executive members and non-executive members must form part of the board, and we did not have those numbers. They needed 7 non-executive members. I think we had about 6. So the reason why we are saying it has been cleared is that when the new board was appointed in November of 2021, all the processes were followed. The HGA Act was followed to the letter. The DPSA handbook for appointment of persons to boards was also followed to the letter. So we are saying that this has been cleared. Next slide, please. Chairperson, before I conclude, I would like to address some of the issues that were raised by the SIU, or maybe let me conclude and then go back to that matter. We have made progress in implementing the corrective action to address the previous audit findings. Like we said, we are about 86%, and we have developed control measures. We are able to detect irregular expenditure on our own before being alerted by auditors. And we've got a risk official that we have appointed. She has established the risk management unit. The risk management plan is in place. She is monitoring with the departmental head all the associated risks that we have in the organization. And control measures have been put in place to avoid repeating the same mistakes. Now, going back to the SIU report, there were specific recommendations that were made by the SIU in as far as Dalana is concerned. The first one was that after having paid 2 invoices of 2.5 million in total, we should no longer continue paying the service provider Aventino. The contract was valued at 15 million, but the last invoices that were paid were those 2 invoices amounting to 2.5 million, and the contract was cancelled. And the other recommendation was that we should place Aventino on the database of restricted suppliers to prohibit them from doing business with the state. We did that. It's quite a laborious process because you have to give them an opportunity to say, you tell them first that this is what you're intending to do, you give them an opportunity to respond, and their lawyers responded, and we continued, and we placed them on the database of restricted suppliers. But the people that can do that is National Treasury. So National Treasury has 14 days to do that once you have submitted the service provider to be placed on that database. So we are waiting for confirmation from National Treasury that indeed this person, this company has been placed on the restricted database, the database of restricted suppliers. SIU recommended that we should deal with three BEC members and three BAC members. The BEC members, two of them are no longer working for the organization. Two of them are still in the employ of the HDA. They are still attending the court case. The court case was postponed to April. Now it is going to sit on the 24th of June. And in as far as the BAC is concerned, they recommended that action should be taken against three BAC members for not applying their mind and not detecting those fraudulent state certificates that were submitted by the bidder. Now, the BAC members rely on the BEC report, and the BEC members do not necessarily do that due diligence that SIU was talking about. So the action that has been taken is to make sure that those, because out of the three that were recommended for disciplinary action, one of them no longer works for the HDA, and two of them are in the employ of the HDA, they have been given warning letters. They have been taken through training to make sure that if they were to be appointed to serve on the bid adjudication committee, they shouldn't only place reliance on the report that comes from bid evaluation committee. They should also request for the actual documents that were used if they have any doubt. So those probity checks are now being done. And the person, the one of Duncan Village, we only have a preliminary report in the agency. I'm sure SIU will share the report that they shared with the portfolio committee today, so that if there's any recommendations that are coming out of the Duncan Village report, we will be in a position to take the necessary action. Chairperson, that is the report that we would like to put before the committee, and the recommendation is that the portfolio committee notes it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll allow members to come in to seek clarity on certain issues or inputs. I see one hand of Honorable Paul. Is there any other hands?
Sifai.
Okay, second hand, Honorable Sitwai. Are these the only two hands, Honorable? Okay. Honorable Paul.
Thanks, Chair. I'm glad that we've still got an hour and 20 minutes, because I've got at least a 10-minute submission to make. So the presentation that's been given to the committee today it's really essentially a tick box exercise. And I do appreciate the detail that the presenter went into in terms of giving the background of what implementation of the recommendation actually means in reality. And also, before I really begin in earnest, I would like to just caveat what I say with the knowledge that the acting CEO, the acting CFO, and the current board are not responsible for what we see in terms of the 2020 audit report. I do understand that. So whilst submissions made by my office might be somewhat scathing, they are not personal. They are rather directed at the entity. and in brief, it seems that there is some work being done to ensure, finally, this is now the third year that this committee has been asking, and there is some work being done. But I still don't think that the presentation given today touches on the depth and the severity of the crisis that the entity has been in, and it doesn't provide a level of detail that is befitting for Parliament in terms of the AG's, the AG, the external audit report. And I'd also just like to say, Chairperson, that as we've heard from the SIU today, there was clearly a wanton disregard in procurement processes, and there are concerns, existing concerns by the SIU around the implementation of remedial actions that are recommended. And this also has to be seen in light of my and certain other members of this committee's repeated requests to the chairperson of this committee during the COVID crisis to conduct detailed oversight and to call the HDA and at the time Minister Sisulu to account before this committee on procurement processes. These requests were ignored. And I think that had this committee exercised the appropriate oversight at the time, and had this committee performed its constitutional functions appropriately, a lot of what we see could have been averted. And I think that it's appropriate at this stage, when we actually see the culmination of the crisis, to remind this committee that during the hard lockdown and the various months that the hard lockdown persisted, not once was Minister Sisulu or the board of the HDA summoned to account before our committee on the CEO's hiring and firing, the appointment and the dissolution of the board, all of the COVID procurement processes that we knew were open to corruption. And I think that this serves as an important reminder to this committee that when one of us submits a request to a chairperson on the basis of suspicions to hold a minister or an entity to account, we must do so at the time, instead of waiting for 2 years after the fact and seeing the materialization of corruption of this nature. So just to refresh the committee and the public's memory as to how severe the audit findings were that the recommendations have been presented to you today, the HDA had received a qualified audit opinion with matters of emphasis for both 1920 and 2021. They didn't have adequate systems in place to maintain records of project obligations. Project obligations were misstated. The auditor was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence for project obligations. Irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure reached 147 million rand by the 2021 financial year. Supply chain management processes were not effectively maintained. Internal controls and required prescripts and supply chain management were not complied with. The entity didn't have adequate systems in place for identifying or recording irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Financial statements that were submitted were not supported by records. Material misstatements in audit reports were identified. And essentially overall, and this is, I quote, this is directly from the audit report that came to Parliament, effective and appropriate steps were not taken by those responsible, aka the accounting authority and the executive authority, to prevent irregular expenditure, which by the end of the financial year had reached 147 million rand. And then we also noted from that same audit report that non-adherence to the PFMA and Treasury regulations had resulted. So non-adherence is it's material and it's negligent. And then the committee will remember, maybe from deliberations in Parliament, but also in terms of the media, that at the same time, Minister Lindiwe Sisulu was shuffling everybody at the top echelons of the HDA. The CEO was appointed, then fired, then the CEO was acting as the board chairperson, the board was appointed, then it was dissolved, people were hired and fired. And this is notwithstanding the findings of the SIU that regard the number of contracts managed by the HDA and the fact that the SIU has now made scathing findings against a number of these same officials. So what I'm getting to is consequence management, because in South Africa, consequence management seems to be lacking. And I think that we've got some really good laws, and the Public Finance Management Act provides Parliament and it provides ordinary members of the public with the tools that they need to hold officials and accounting officers and authorities to account. So let's look at Section 65B of the PFMA, Chairperson. This prescript requires the executive authority, aka a minister, that is responsible for a department or an entity to table in the NA the findings of a disciplinary board and any sanctions that have been imposed by that board, which has heard a case of financial misconduct against an accounting officer or an accounting authority. Now, you will recall that I have written to the HDA and officials at the HDA who were there when I wrote to them. We submitted a letter to say we haven't received a Section 65 report. The minister's fired the board or dissolved the board. She's fired the CEO, but yet we're not seeing any results from disciplinary hearings. So we've been told, and I've got the letter from the HDA, no such Section 65 BPFMA reports exist, despite all the hirings and firings. Then Section 83, and this is the provision of the PFMA that I think is most meaningful to us as the committee. It deals with financial misconduct of accounting authorities and officials of public entities. And it states that the accounting authority for a public entity commits an act of financial misconduct if that accounting authority willfully or negligently fails to comply with a number of PFMA requirements, makes or permits an irregular or a fruitless or wasteful expenditure, and if the accounting authority is a board, the Act says that each and every member is liable in their own right, in their personal capacity. So the HDA has told this committee today that they have established an internal condonations committee to deal with all irregular expenditure that dates back from 2016 up until 2021-22. And that the results, and this is in the presentation, the results of the completed determination test do not reflect any corrupt, criminal, or fraudulent activities. Now, my question is, this doesn't reconcile with even the most preliminary findings of the SIU that related to the HDA in the 2021 financial year. And the BAC is a primary example. We're told that we know BAC officials were arrested in December 2020 on the Aventino scandal. We've been told in reports that they didn't conduct due diligence. And this is one of many instances where there's criminal culpability that does indeed point to corruption, criminal, fraudulent activities. But the condemnation committee or the report we're receiving today says there's no indication of this. And then I also don't understand how this is possible, given that a number of HDA officials were arrested in relation to the Tulana hostel scandal and that are out on bail. I mean, we've heard today that some of those BAC members were given training and a warning letter. Are these the same officials that were actually arrested by the Hawks and charged by the National Prosecuting Authority? Are these the same people that are receiving training by the entity? So I'll get to my questions, because I understand that time is of the essence here. The SIU presentations, the signing of the audit report, and the details provided today on the internal findings of the condemnation committee don't reconcile. Can we have the acting CEO's opinion and views on that? Then what was the mandate of the condemnation committee in law? And can this committee, this parliamentary committee, please be provided with the composition and the terms of reference of the condemnation committee? So who sits on that? And their terms of reference. Then what was the mandate of the external professionals, the two people that were mentioned, employed by the HDA to perform functions related to the assessment of irregular expenditure? Do these experts have forensic audit experience? Because when we're complying with AG or external audit finding recommendations, it's always just a tick box exercise. Has there been a deep dive into the forensic component of this wasteful expenditure? Is there a forensic audit or investigation being carried out? Then what investigations is the HDA conducting into the activities of the previous board, the previous CEOs and BAC members? I don't want to get political, but we released a number of media statements about who those people were, who their connections were, why they'd been brought in, brought out. There's been a huge storm around this. I know that there's a new board. The new broom has swept clean. What are there any investigations going on into what happened there? How many officials have the HDA or the Condemnation Committee recommended be referred for criminal investigation? My guess is none, given that they don't suspect any fraud. I'm nearly finished, Chairperson. Then how can, I'll skip that question. My last two questions are, given the findings of the SAU, it could be assumed that there was gross negligence. Would the HDA agree that there may have been negligence by the accounting authority? And if so, would they support a criminal referral of the previous accounting authority in terms of Section 83 of the Public Finance Management Act? I know that that's a tricky question to answer. On closing remarks, I just want to say that as my office is done with certain of the matters that were presented in the SAU report today, we will be making a blanket referral of the previous accounting authority, aka the board, to the Hawks in terms of Section 86 of the PFMA. And after having heard from the advocate at the SAU that we can make a blanket referral for a forensic review of the Condemnation Committee's report, we will also be submitting a referral to the SAU to review all of the findings of the HDA's internal Condemnation Committee and the findings of their external experts. I've got one question for the Director General of the National Department, and that is with regards to the NHBRC. We saw in the SAU's report that a referral had been submitted to the NHBRC for them to take administrative action against Aventino, but I received a parliamentary questions response earlier this month that said that to date, the NHBRC is only considering the matter and that the investigation is being finalized and the matter will serve before the disciplinary committee with a view to taking a decision on whether disciplinary action should be taken on the 15th of June 2020. Those guys were arrested in December 2020. So it's now been 18 months since the NPA charged the director of Aventino in court, but I was told in a response to a parliamentary question that the NHBRC hasn't even made a decision on yet instituting disciplinary action. And we were also told in a parliamentary question that the National Department and the Provincial Department haven't blacklisted a single supplier since 2016. Mr. Changana, I know that you are not the accounting officer for the NHBRC and that potentially they need to answer for themselves, but if you've got any responses, that would be most appreciated. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Paul. I don't say I don't give you more time. I give you more time more than anyone else.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Number two. Honorable Lindsay.
I muted myself by mistake. Sorry, Chair. Chairperson, thank you very much. I think this presentation was very strategic that preceded by SIU. And I think we learned a lot from SIU and we learned a lot on the clear recovery plan that the department is putting in place to address the issues of HDA. I want to make two proposals, Chair, excited thereof about this presentation. And also we need to thank the minister. And also the minister, we need to say, please don't be under pressure about many other issues. Take your time because HDA, very clear, it was established, but it did not have tooth to bite to ensure that it protects the people of this country in terms of its organizational structure. I think it's proper to say that, but I do want to make a request that additional to the presentation that has been made, that perhaps we get a clear organizational structure that stands alone of HDA. Because that's where the crux of the matter is. And the second issue, to plead with the department. Up until we have a strengthened monitoring and evaluation program unit, not to depend on the monitoring by management, a monitoring that also reports to the monitoring of the presidency about issues of service delivery and program performance. I wanted to make those two proposals, Chair, but excited about what the department is doing to address the issues of HDA and to say those that have been seen corrupt, they must answer to the public of this country. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Those were the only two hands. Department.
Thank you very much. I think we need to give HDA to respond to, because most of the questions are directed to them. Then the DG will come at the end, and I will then come after DG. Thank you very much, Chair, in that order.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Deputy Minister. And thank you for the engagement coming from the Honorable Members of the Committee. I'm going to just make a few remarks, and then I'll ask the Acting CEO to provide some details that have been requested in terms of, I will indicate, in fact, where I think she needs to provide some detail. But I want to start by saying that one of the things that may not be explicit, because it was not indicated when the FIU reported, is that we are very serious in dealing with these matters. Hence, the FIU could not indicate our lack of cooperation with their investigations. The cooperation that we are making with the FIU is indeed to make sure that we get to the bottom of these matters. And also to say that we don't want any irregular expenditure. These cases, compared to the large amount of contracts that the HDA does, are of course a few of those transgressions which we ourselves as the board do not want to happen, because ultimately we want the public to have confidence that their resources have been placed in an institution that looks after them according to the required laws of governing how they are to be expended. And we regret that there are these few instances of irregular expenditure in the vast amount of projects that we deal with as the HDA. Our ultimate ambition, and I think it is in fact expected of us, is to ensure that we don't have any qualified audits because the prescripts of the law are quite clear as to how we should deal with these matters. And I just want to say that the as per the report presented by the acting CEO, there have been consequence management actions taken against or with regard to some of the officials that are involved. She will give details as to whether those are the same as those that have been arrested. But safe to say that because these matters of the SIU are still in court, I think it will help us a great deal, the outcomes of those court processes. On those matters where the matters are in court, which are sub judice, I think we're going to watch very closely as to the outcome of those processes. We still want to be afforded, we will request to be afforded a chance as the HDA to thoroughly engage with the report of the SIU. At the moment, we have really just received the one report here at the meeting, and we understand that there is a hierarchy of where the report is submitted beforehand. But as soon as it is brought to the HDA, we are going to scrutinize it very closely to make sure that whatever is recommended by the SIU is implemented, and it can assist us to avoid any recurrence. But I want to also add that consequence management for us is not limited to employees of the organization, because we are an organization that works with service providers, where we procure contractors and professional teams. And it's quite important that where we have seen a trend of lack of quality of implementation of work, or we have seen a misrepresentations by some service providers, consequence management is also undertaken there. Among others, including cancellation of contracts, that we see that there is either a criminality, fraud and corruption, or lack of quality work taking place. And there is also a clause of retention that governs our contracting with contractors, where we actually retain any retention funds that those contractors would have agreed to be retained by the HDA if it is found that they have not implemented the work accordingly. So I'm emphasizing here that consequence management does not only end with employees of the agency, it goes all the way and includes our service providers as well. In terms of the composition of the coordination committee and its purpose and mandate, I think that the acting CEO will speak to that. Safe to say that members, honorable members, the National Treasury recognizes the matter of irregular expenditure and how it has to be dealt with in the financials of the organization, as a result of which it issued guidelines on irregular expenditure in May 2014, which in the main allow or help our institutions how to deal with irregular expenditure, including condonation, because condonation is important. The reason why condonation is important is that it helps to guide what kind of action should be taken by the institution in cases where the condonation is granted by the National Treasury. There may be no specific further action except that the institution itself feels needs to be taken. But where condonation is not granted, there is a need to undertake processes to recover the expenditure from the relevant persons that were involved in that irregular expenditure. And condonation is granted under very strict conditions that the institution has to meet that is requesting for that condonation. Let me hasten to say that the condonation committee at the HDA can make a number of recommendations with regard to irregular expenditure, but the final arbiter lies with the National Treasury in terms of whether they grant those that condonation or not. We cannot comment on the action that the Honorable Member Powell is taking in terms of referring the condonation committee and its recommendations to the Hawks or any other institution. But the emphasis that we want to make here is that the only decision on matters of condonation that have to be taken in regard to irregular expenditure have to be done by the National Treasury, following, as I have said, a strict number of conditions that we have to meet. Insofar as the comments of Honorable Sishwai, we are indeed very focused on this matter of reviewing the organizational structure in light of the huge number of programs and projects that we have. And we through the interaction with our with the executive authority, I'm sure that we will keep the portfolio committee abreast of developments in that regard. If I may ask you, Acting CEO, to come in and provide some of the details that were required in the questions, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. When it gets to the questions that were raised by Honorable Member Powell, the issue of the previous CEOs and CFOs and previous boards, there were issues that were raised, not necessarily by our external auditors, but by our internal auditors. And those issues were referred to a law firm that is investigating the activities that the internal auditors raised and said they were not procedural. And Member Powell wanted to know how many officials, if any, are now facing a disciplinary action as a result of audit findings. We do have our head of corporate support who is suspended and is undergoing disciplinary process. And it is as a result of matters that were raised by our internal auditors. And then we do have head of strategic support is also another executive who is also on a precautionary suspension and facing disciplinary process, but because of issues that were also raised by the internal auditors. We do have a senior official who is a provincial head who is under suspension and is facing disciplinary process for non-performance for dereliction of duties. And we do have officials within the HDA who are facing a disciplinary process but are not on suspension on other matters. I think the legal manager was still to confirm how many cases are we dealing with that have to do with non-performance and matters that have been raised with senior managers. And we do have two officials that are attending a court case that is in relation to Dalana. That is that question of how many officials have been referred for criminal prosecution. The issue of the blanket referral, I think Chairperson has addressed that. The issue of who sits on the condemnation committee, I can send the terms of reference of the condemnation committee, which was established in terms of the irregular expenditure framework that was approved by the board, and also the members of that condemnation committee. I can send that information to the secretariat to share it with members. And the other items that were raised of the fact that the report is scathing, yes, I do agree, Member Powell, the report is scathing, and we deal with these matters one by one. On the issue of project obligations, previously we never had anybody dealing with that. We have dedicated people that are now dealing with project obligations, and we are paying particular attention to that. Issue of supply chain management, we still have a few vacancies in the supply chain management at senior levels, but also at administrative levels. But once the moratorium on recruitment has been dealt with, we will be in a position to fill those vacancies and to beef up the capacity that we require in the supply chain management unit. We have SCM as part of our standing items and standing reports in EXCO. And the issue of irregular expenditure, we've talked about the registers that we have. And I understand what Member Powell is saying, that the essence is to prevent irregular expenditure from occurring. So there is a number of checks and balances that you have to do before you sign any invoice, before you approve any payment, and we make sure that we send it back and send it back and send it back until it is properly done. So the person, I will leave it at that and say if there's any other information. Member Powell is saying that she wrote to HDA and the response that she received was not satisfactory. I don't know if I am qualified to ask Member Powell to maybe direct that same correspondence to our board chair so that it can then be adequately responded to. I will leave it at that, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Are the two comrades that asked questions satisfied with the responses? I see.
Honourable Powell?
Yes, yes. No, I'm noting you. Please be patient. Honourable Nancy, are you satisfied? Okay, if your hands are satisfied. Honourable Powell, because I gave you more time in the last, I'll request that you don't take too long in your follow-ups.
Okay. No, it's just one thing. The letter was written pertaining to the 2020-21 financial year. It was asking the HDA what action had been taken in terms of Section 65B of the PFMA, and I did receive a response to say no action had been taken. I will redirect a new letter and provide the HDA with an opportunity to tell Parliament if any action has been taken. I'll get that done tomorrow. So that's fine. Please, can I just ask, I'll find the email address myself. And then just the one question that hasn't been answered goes to the heart of what I've asked is, you note that the reports are scathing, and everybody knows what happened during that time period, although people can't speak openly about it. My question was, why does the report that's been given to this committee today states that there is nothing that has been investigated by the Condemnation Committee, and I'm reading verbatim, it does not reflect any corrupt criminal or fraudulent activities. This is in regards to the 147 million rand irregular expenditure. That's not correct because of how many people are facing criminal charges. Can we get clarity on why that sentence has been included in this report? Thank you.
The department and HDA.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the presentation, I indicated that 65 transactions have been subjected to the determination test. We still have about 10 transactions that will be finalized by the 31st of May. And I'm not sure in the annual financial statement of 2021, if the spreadsheet appears, but I think maybe only the summary appears. What I can do is to share the report of the Condemnation Committee, because they go line by line. If you say bid specification committee was not formed to determine bid specifications and the service provider consent is so and so, they will then give us a full report of the assessment, of the determination, and of what it is that they are recommending. They do that matter by matter. So for the ones that we have already completed, if we say scope variation above 15% was not approved by National Treasury, they will go into there and check if there was any fraud or theft or financial misconduct or what happened there, what was the root cause, and then they will then recommend accordingly. And that information is available. It is detailed, and I am sure chairperson of the board would not object in us sharing that information with the committee, so that the committee can satisfy itself that indeed the whatever transgression, if it was tax affairs of the supplier, there was no theft. It's just that the tax affairs of the supplier were not in order, or where they are SBD forms, or any one of, I'm just trying to remember the irregular expenditure off the top of my head. But I think we will provide that information so that where there is doubt, then it can be questioned, because the team that is assisting us, they are also subjected to internal audit and risk management, and we have people who are also having a legal background in these teams. So we have supply chain management specialists in these teams, and we should be in a position to detect a fraud or theft or loss if there is any in the 2020-2021. We will still go back to the prior years until we reach 2016. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, if I may just add, this is the chairperson of the board. It is indeed a reality that there are cases that the SIU has opened, and those have to be concluded in order for us to know indeed that what the individuals are being charged for, what is the outcome of those cases. Insofar as that is concerned, I think it would be prudent in order to be in concurrence with what the SIU is doing, to simply state it that insofar as allegations of criminal conduct and fraud are concerned, the SIU is currently involved in taking criminal cases to court. Those are sub judice, and therefore we await the outcome. But I think we need to state it as it is. I don't think that will be a quarrel that we have in augmenting this report to simply state what is happening. I think what we cannot do is to assume what the outcome of those cases will be. But I think to state the reality of what is taking place would not hurt augmented part of the report. I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair of HDA and colleagues that have responded. And I believe that all members have been covered and been given opportunity to contribute. I'll request the Secretary to flag the agenda again. Secretary. I think now that we're done, we had a very fruitful meeting, and I believe that all members have sent back the report that we got from
both. Honorable Powell.
Honorable Powell.
There was a question to the Director General about the NHBRC.
Okay. Let's just check with the DG if you'll be able to respond on it, because there's no one from that entity here, only HDA in the department. DG?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairs and Honorable Powell, for the question. The NHBRC has attended to the matter, and they sourced a legal opinion on how best to deal with this issue. I think there are complications, and one of the complications is the fact that one, the TRUs are not enrolled with NHPRC, unlike all other programs, because this is a temporary residential unit. So there's no need for enrollment, and that creates a complication of jurisdiction as well over the project, because if it's not enrolled, can NHPRC act on it? And there's also no requirement for the service provider to be registered in the provision of TRUs. We discussed the matter with the CEO, and the legal opinion is of the view that the contracting parties, in this case, it's the province, who's contracting with the service provider, and HDA, who's the contracting party. The contracting parties themselves, they have the jurisdiction over the service provider, and they can take action against the service provider. And in this case, they have taken action against the service provider. There is criminal action against the service provider, and both HDA and the province are assisting the SIU to deal with the matter. If it was a normal housing project, as we built a 40 square meter BNG, NHPRC would have acted within a month. I think here there is an issue of the contracting arrangement, the jurisdiction arrangement, and also the fact that we're not talking about a normal house, we're talking about a temporary residential unit. But the CEO of NHPRC has offered to give us a report on the work that they've done on this. I will leave it there for now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. DG, if there's anything else you want to say apart from what you've just said, then we give it to you and the DM. Then I would like to welcome the chairperson. We've just entered the meeting. I'll also allow her a chance if there's something that she wants to say before we officially close the meeting. DG?
Once again, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We think that this was a good report by the SIU, and we welcome the report by the SIU, and its value for money. Maybe we should remind honorable members of the portfolio committee that it is the department that pays for these investigations. So at some point, we will be asked to account for the money that we are paying for these investigations, because it's coming from the department, it's coming from our vote. So there is value for money. I think they're doing a good job, and we support the work that SIU is doing. Mam Nancy, Honorable Swai has been very consistent about the capacity of the MNE component of the department. Yes, the Department of Human Settlements, it's not like your public works department that has provincial or regional structures over and above the fact that there is a provincial Department of Human Settlement. So we would want to get more capacity to monitor what's happening in provinces. But we also have challenges with our COE budget, the compensation of employees budget, which is getting smaller and smaller. Beefing up capacity in the regions, in the metros, to monitor what's happening in provinces and in metros is what we want to do. But there is a limit in terms of how far we can go to fund that. But the decision that we've taken is to invest in technology, because sometimes it's not so much about boots on the ground. It's about whether we can use the existing technology or the new technology to be able to pick up these things before they happen. In terms of procurement becomes a little bit of a challenge for us, because remember, you have an accounting officer in the province or in the NDT, you have an accounting authority. And if the procurement processes go wrong, they must take full responsibility. And monitoring that is going to pose a challenge for a very long time, because it's called an accounting officer system. So that if things do go wrong, the accounting officer must take full responsibility for both the good and the bad. There's no amount of monitoring that will, will fix things there. At the end of the day, and I've said it before, we need to make sure that we appoint people who are fit for purpose, people who understand what it means to be an accounting officer in a province and what it means to be an accounting officer at a municipal level and also at an entity level. I am optimistic about the HDA capacity. It varies from region to region. If you look at KZN team of HDA, they're doing a sterling job there supporting KZN. The Western Cape, they have good infrastructure there. They have good warm bodies, Northern Cape as well. They are assisting. We're still struggling in the Northwest to find the right capacity in Limpopo. But over time, I'm very optimistic that HDA will be able to get the right capacity to all the provinces. The capacity is not needed at head office, at Kilani. It's needed in the regions. Kilani can support Gauteng, but we need to provide more capacity to those provinces that are struggling. Chairperson, we noted some of the comments, and most of them, especially from Honorable Sikhwai, are comments that are intended to enhance the quality of our work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. DM?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me note and appreciate the compliments given to the current board and executive team on the work done. While there is a lot to be done, it is important to give credit where it's due. The presentation by SIU Chair earlier this morning was very informative and provided an unfortunate picture of what is happening behind the scenes in entity and the department. I think it was critical and beneficial for the current leadership of SDA to be exposed to the gravity of the work laying ahead of them. I have a feeling that no stone should be left unturned in ensuring those who take advantage of poor South Africans are made to account for their actions, Chair. I'm happy also to hear from the HDA that there are those that are in court, and I read in the newspapers that there are two officials that are in court that are refused. I think they refused bail for them, which I think for me it's a good thing so that people learn lessons. Chairperson, I'm confident that the HDA is in the right path on sub-correction. The appointment of the COO, as I said in my opening remarks, and CFO will reinforce this trend, which I see it's quite good. Lastly, Chair, without wasting your time, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee for the sterling job, Chair, of oversight. Let me also thank the Chairperson of HDA for steering the ship in the right direction. Thank the DG and the team for the support that they provide. I'm a bit feverish, Chair. I'm from Northwest, and thank you for last night. I want to apologize. I thought I would give you a ring last night. I thought I wouldn't make it for today, but I had my medication. I'm better now. Thank you very much. Thanks for everything.
Chairperson of the committee.
Thank you very much, Malachi, for steering this meeting, and thanks for the department and the SIU for sharing their report, and join the DM to congratulate the new board on the sterling work that they are doing, and thank the previous administrator who came in this committee to brief the committee, Dr. Mahapa, what he was doing in dealing with some of the matters, and we want to thank them, and with their hands-on approach of the Dr. Rachitanga, I think the ADA will be able to resolve and build a strong entity. And again, thanks DG Changana, because at the time SDA had problems. At the time we were human settlement, water and sanitation. DG Changana was asked with the CEO of NHPRC to go into water and sanitation to stabilize that department, which was in a serious, serious crisis. And the work that they've done in stabilizing water, it's well appreciated. And we'll support the SIU. All of us, we have to support them to make sure that those that have faltered to the system, they pay the price. And this committee will continue to engage and play oversight as we've been doing it. Thank you, Chair, for chairing this meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorables. And I think we had a very progressive meeting. And thank you to the chairperson of ADA, Dr. Chidizi. Thank you to the DG, Dr. Mbulelo. Thank you to the minister, deputy minister, and the chair of the committee. And I think if we continue this way, we'll have a lot of progressive meetings. We have kept the time as per the agreement. We've agreed that at least we must not go above the 1 p.m. time that we've agreed upon. And as I check now, we are at 12:36, and we need to keep it that way, because our job as a committee is not to stay in meetings for hours, but is to implement and play our role of oversight, making sure that the committee implement some of the discussion decisions that we've resolved on. Now, we thank you for the patience that you had, and everyone else allowed to contribute into this meeting. The meeting is officially closed.
Long live the chair.
Long live chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.